The following is a presentation of Focus on Metal in Sacred Metal cooperation with the Blast Syndicate. Find this show and all our other partners in metal at blastsyndicate.com.
Hey everybody, this is Michael Sweet from Striper, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, metalheads, welcome to another episode of Focus on Metal. Scott Thompson here with
Richie.
Yes, back in the studio, the one and only Richie, and got a great show on tap for you this week. Tell them who we got.
Again, we've the very, very prolific Michael Sweet.
Yes.
Who is here to promote the new Striper album, Fallen.
Yep.
And it is a fantastic record, easily their heaviest record.
Right. So, of course, you know, by the time you guys hear this, it will have been out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, but they've released songs off it.
Yep.
They've released Yahweh. I think they've released Big Screen Lies. I think they've released one or two more, but the whole album is going to be out there now.
Yeah.
And it's 12 tracks, one ballad, and the Black Sabbath cover, which is not out of place on the album at all. So that'll tell you how heavy the album is.
Right.
And just a great record.
Yeah, yeah. So again, fortunate to get Michael on, and this is another one that Richie arranged on the backside, so it wasn't this 20-minute radio promo interview where you barely get to say hi and anything else. This was a nice, good interview, and really good in-depth stuff, and Michael talked a lot about everything going on and the album and stuff. So I think everybody, if you're a Striper fan or Michael Sweet fan, you'll definitely enjoy this.
Yeah, we touch on other things too. We touch a little bit on so he talks a bit about the solo album he's going to be recording.
Right.
Sweet Lynch. I did talk to him a little bit about his acoustic shows. And just 45 minutes.
Yeah.
The last time I think we talked to him, we had like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we just didn't have a set time on this one.
Right.
Which is always the ones that I like to do, because you're not going, boom, next question, boom, yep, next question. And he can go where he wants to go and not feel, looking at his watch, saying, right, I have to get these questions in and I have to answer them and then be asked the same questions in the next interview. And you can tell, depending on what stage of the day you're at, how fried he is. And he was in great spirits on this one.
Yeah, definitely, definitely great spirits.
Yeah.
Really upbeat. Maybe it was the afternoon thing too, because the last couple times we talked to him was at night too.
Yeah, and the winter was pretty bad here.
Yeah,
as well.
Winter sucked. Yeah,
so
definitely.
He probably has a snowblower like calling his name in the shed or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. This is the first time we've talked to him where it's actually been decent weather.
Yeah.
It's been snowstorms. It's been pouring rain.
Thunder and lightning one night.
That's right. So, yeah. But I think a great interview and just a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, we'll probably have him on again now when his solo album comes out in 6 or 8 months' time.
Right, yep. And of course, you know, the solo album is coming out on Rat Pack.
Yep.
So, you know, be looking on the Rat Pack site all the time for that. And of course, we'll announce it when we know about it as well. And always good stuff, you know, happening up on Rat Pack. So keep tabs on that. Of course, obviously, 2 weeks ago, I heard from Jerry Gaskill. He's on Rat Pack, so continually to look at good stuff on there. So yeah,
all of King's X, King's X are on Rat Pack, but they're all on solo deals.
Yeah. So, and then just before we dive into the rest of the show, too, is just to let everybody know that we're on a new network as well. So besides the the great internet stations that carry us and our website and iTunes and everywhere else that we are. We are now also proud members of the Blast Syndicate.
Nice.
So that's a good deal, and it's kind of, an offshoot or a rebirth of a lot of folks that were in the Cast Iron Ring and some other folks as well, kind of a loose association of shows, but that is called the Blast Syndicate, so look for us online or on Twitter, and big thanks to Rock and Victor for putting a lot of the hard work into making that all happen. So just very cool. So, so that's definitely something cool that's going on. So between Blast Syndicate and In Ear Peeler, two places to go to be looking for other podcasts. So, yeah. So I think before we dive in and talk with Michael, let's do a track of the week.
Okay.
All right. All right, we got a great track of the week for you this week. Album that came out on October 30th. It is from the band Ambush from Sweden. And don't go and look up like ambushband.com or something like that, because you're going to get totally the wrong kind of bands, because there's a couple other Ambushes out there. And there's one that's down in the Louisiana area. So you bring up that website, you're going to see a dude with a guitar. You know you're in the wrong place. And there's another one that's like a country band in Canada. But nope, this is Sweden's band, Ambush. And they are very much in the vein of Accept and Judas Priest, all that good stuff. And they've been around for a couple years. They put out an EP. And then in 2014, they put out their first release called Firestorm. And they have followed up this year, as I said, released on October 30th with the album Desecrator. Now, at first, I was thinking, do I want to play a track off of an album called Desecrator on a show where we're featuring a big interview with Michael Sweet? But you go back and you listen to the music on here, and really, the sonically, the two go together really well, that they're both steeped in that classic metal origins. And I really thought that overall, somebody that likes the music of Stryper would listen to this and be, wow, I really like that band. So if you like these guys, you can catch up with them at Facebook at facebook.com/AmbushSweden. That will get you the right website to hook up with these guys. So let's just dive into a track off of the new one from Ambush. This is also, by the way, out on High Roller Records. And for those of you not familiar with High Roller, they have got some really great, great artists on there, always coming out with some cool and eclectic releases. But back to the track, this one is called Chain Reaction, and it's very Priesty sounding, but it's got some Accept in there as well. And I just think sonically it vibes really well with everything else going on with the show this week. So from the album Desecrator, from Sweden's own Ambush, this one is The Chain Reaction. There you go, Sweden's own Ambush. As I said, right, very much that Stryper kind of sound to what they're doing as well. So I thought it fit really well, just sonically, with everything else going on this week. And as I said before, what's going on this week is an interview with Michael Sweet. Michael agreed to come back on the show once again. I don't know how he's not sick of us yet, but he continues to graciously come back on the show time after time. Seems to be working, so we're not going to screw with it. So just a quick explanation before we dive into the interview, that usually when we are on the phone with an artist, sometimes we have a little bit of chit-chat at the beginning and all of that, and then we just kind of go into interview mode and I hit record and we start doing our stuff. Or at least somewhere between the beginning of the call and when we start to go into interview mode, I hit record. And that's what I was doing on this interview as well. We just kind of had a little chit chat with Michael and, you know, obviously he's been on so many times that we're pretty friendly with each other and all that. And I realized the conversation was going along so well that I felt it would be really detrimental to the conversation flow to go into true interview mode. And I just figured we're just going to keep going on this. So we were actually going to go into this interview essentially in progress. So you've missed maybe about the first minute, minute and a half of conversation we had with Michael. And we were just joking with him about how busy he is and all of that. And I think you'll hear in the conversation that, yeah, it probably would have just screwed up the overall flow if we just stopped that and then started to go into this official interview thing. Why not just do the conversation? We're more a conversational show than we are a straight, boring radio interview show. Anyways, so that's about all you missed here was us saying hi to Michael, how we're doing, all that, and just joking with him about the fact that he's constantly doing stuff. And it goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyways. You definitely want to go out and pick up the latest release, Fallen, by Striper. And also, if you want to find out what's going on with Michael Sweet, with Striper, with all the stuff that he's involved with, you can go up to michaelsweet.com. That will also give you tour dates, merch, the whole deal. So again, that's michaelsweet.com. So here it is, our latest conversation with Michael Sweet.
And I've got a lot of stuff going on, and I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I like to stay active, and I figure I got to get it in, man. Get it all in before I retire, and that day is going to come.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to tell you, too, that every time that one of us mentions either anything you've done or that you're doing something with the show, the amount of feedback we get is probably the largest of any guest we ever have. It's like night and day. It's stunning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Well, you know what it is. It's all those Slayer fans, man, who are checking in.
Yeah, like I got the new record a while ago, and I just happened to put it up on our Facebook page that I had it and I'd heard it. And people were asking me, what's it like? What's this song like? What's that song like? And
wow.
I got a ton of feedback on it. It was great.
That's awesome, man.
It's great to know that people are so into everything that you're still doing. So, I mean, that's going to be nice for you as an artist, too.
Well, it really is. It's incredible. And, you know, the fact that we, you know, we were certainly the underdogs back in the day. Mm. You know, we did things different, and we weren't really like any other band. And, you know, we went against the system, so to speak. And then we disbanded and went our separate ways for a number of years and came back, and we had that against us. Once we started touring again in 03, we were kind of trying to rebuild, you know. And then to look forward now to 2015 and see where we're at and what's been accomplished, it's mind-boggling to me. It's pretty astonishing, and it says so much about the legacy of Striper, you know, to me. And it's humbling. I mean, I say that as a humble man, not an egotistical, prideful guy here, but just humble, and I still can't believe it. It's crazy.
Yeah, so when you got back together, like you've recorded a lot of material in the last couple of years. Like, is the amount of material you've done, is that surprising to you, or was there a plan in place at all?
Not really. I mean, we kind of got a boost and a kick in the butt when we did our record deal with Frontiers Records. And the way that was scheduled, and I still kind of shake my head and think, gosh, what, were you crazy? It was scheduled, you know, one right after the other, you know, turn in this album and then start on that one, turn it in, start on that one.
Yeah.
And it was wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It was just one right after the other. And then after we turned in Live at the Whiskey, we basically started preparing mentally anyway for, Fallen. So there's, you know, you're talking about four Striper albums and you're talking about a Sweet Lynch album and a solo album, obviously through another label. But those five albums mentioned through Frontiers in the past, you know, not even three years.
Yeah, it's like the 70s all over again.
Exactly. And, you know, it makes me respect the 70s even more. And it's one of my favorite eras in music. And I look at it, I look back and I think how hard those bands worked. Mm. Not that bands today don't work as hard, but it's just a different time. And music is a different world right now.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you look back and you think about the fact that, you know, they were writing that second album in the cycle, pretty much always on the road. And you read through some of the histories of the bands and you see they were recording like everywhere that they were. It wasn't just like today where you get in one studio, you read about Zeppelin being in, you know, everywhere they were touring. Jimmy was wherever studio he could grab recording stuff and everything. It's pretty amazing that the stuff they used to do to keep that output going.
Exactly. And then if you want to go even further back, go back to the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, those guys were putting out sometimes four albums in a year.
Right. Yeah. And multiple versions, too. You got your English version, your U.S. version. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And, you know, that's why it's important still to this day for me. I have to say come again when people ask me, why are you still recording music in today's music world? And I just think, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Why would you even ask such a stupid question? because I love music and I'm passionate about it and it's in me.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's like asking an artist, why would you paint anymore? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. As long as that passion is there and the well is overflowing, which it still is, we're going to go and record and we're going to make music. And, you know, it doesn't matter if sales are down. It's never been about sales with us anyway. I mean, it's not. If the money's there and we can go record an album, we're going to go record an album, regardless if it sells 1,000 copies. I really don't care.
So let's get into a little bit more into the Fallen record, Michael. When we had you on earlier in the year, you'd just done the Sweet Lynch record and you were just preparing to write this one. And you said you wanted to go this album to be a little bit heavier than the last one. What made you want to go in that direction?
Well, I mean, we are a band that listens to its fans. Now, there was a period in time when we didn't listen, and it wasn't out of spite. It was just because we just weren't tuned in to the fans.
Yeah.
I wasn't as active on social media. I didn't have a Facebook for a while. The reason why I deactivated my Facebook is I took a lot of grief, you know, when I met someone so soon and remarried after my wife had passed. And I got loads of hate messages from people that was mind-boggling. So I just closed my Facebook account down. And it took me a long time to start a new one. But once I did, just a few years ago, basically, I started becoming much more active. And in doing so, I started wanting to know what the fans want and get their opinion. And I asked them quite often, like, what do you think, guys? What do you think we should do for this? Or what do you think we should do on the next album? Or what do you want me to do on the next solo album? And I go in and I read all those comments. And I take it to heart. Because the reason why I do that, it's not a sellout. I'm still staying true to my art and true to my band and true to myself. But it's important to me to know what the fans want because they're the reason why I'm sitting here talking to you.
Yeah, that's interesting, Michael, because one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, as the primary writer in the band, where does the second opinion come from after you've written the tracks? And obviously you're looking at what the fans want as they're the outside opinion to what you're writing.
Well, that's the beautiful thing. And I say this humbly, but the beauty in that is there is no second opinion. And what I mean by that is back in the day, you know, I despise demos and having and A&R guys. I despise them. I think it's the biggest joke and waste of time and effort and energy ever. Granted, I'll give you the fact that some bands need it. Some bands need your direction. But when you're a band that knows what they're doing and you're writing your material and you've been successful with it and you've lived in studios your entire life, you don't need some guy in a suit telling you how to make music. Or what's good or what's bad. So that's what I mean by I'm not a fan of second opinions. I know what's good and I know what's bad.
Yeah.
My ears are good enough. They haven't failed me yet. You know, I'm a good judge of music, just like any other A&R schmo out there. So.
Yeah. So, like, do you always write with a clean slate for each record? Because when we talked to you earlier in the year, you said you were just getting ready to write it.
Well, you know, when I told you I was getting ready to write it, I made the mistake of not actually sitting down and doing so. I was so busy, and my schedule took me right up to when we were supposed to start recording, and I only had a two-week window before the guys were coming out to my house, because that's where we do pre-production, is here at my house in my studio. Mm-hmm. And during that two-week window, I was going away with my wife to celebrate our 50-year anniversary. So I took a couple of days out of that, and so I really wound up only having almost 10 days to write the whole album.
Wow.
And I had some ideas in my phone, guitar ideas and stuff, but I just had to really focus. And I was definitely nervous and, you know, a little apprehensive. And I sat at the island. I'd go down to my studio when my wife was away at work during the day and work. And then when she'd come home and cook dinner or what have you, I'd come up to the kitchen and write at the island while she would cook. And I just kept writing 24/7. And in 9 days, there was the whole album.
Yeah, it's like that quote that I read from Paul Stanley years ago, from perspiration comes inspiration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's true. It really is. And I'm one of those guys, you know, when I hear stories about bands and I say, how long did it take you to write the record, man? They say, oh, we've been working on it for 2 years, man, and we had like 30 songs. I don't want to be rude. I don't say anything, but I'm thinking, what? Are you serious? Wow. But I have better things to do. You know, I love writing songs, but gosh, I wouldn't spend 2 years writing a record. I would really start to second guess myself and start to wonder if it's any good or not. But I know it instantly. If I'm working on a song, I'll know within 5 minutes if I should keep working on it or throw it out.
Yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And when I know I'm supposed to keep working on it, I complete it, and then I go on, move on to the next. And it's usually about a two-hour ordeal to finish a song, lyrics and music.
Yeah, because I remember when we had Kip Winger on about a year or two ago, he said that why keep working on a song that he knows is crap?
Exactly. I mean, Kip is a very talented, incredible musician, man, composer, and, you know, one of my favorites, and I respect him immensely. Why would you second guess Kip?
Yeah.
Kip doesn't need no second opinion, you know?
Yeah. So when you brought the heavier material to the band, were they all initially on board with it?
I kept sending text messages and emails saying, hey, here's what I want to do, and they were all on board. Yeah. You know, when I picked the song After Forever, I said, what do you guys think? And everyone was like, oh, that's great. You know, Oz especially, because Oz was, you know, playing Sabbath songs when he was a teenager, and he had a SG just like Tony Iommi. He got his name Ozzy from singing like Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, Michael. I was going to bring it up later, but... You did the Sabbath song on this record. Was that one of the songs that was submitted for the covering?
It wasn't.
Okay.
What happened with that song is, you know, somewhat recently, I wound up reading the lyrics of that song. You know, when I say recently, I mean, you know, 7, 8, 9 months ago. I read the lyrics of that song, and I was pretty moved by the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I felt like, oh my gosh, you know, this is about as Christian as it gets. This is amazing. And I was intrigued by that. And then I listened to the song, and I really liked it. You know, I had heard it before when I was younger, used to play Sabbath songs and cover bands all day long, but I never really focused on that song. And then I, you know, revisited the tune, and I loved it. And as I was writing Fallen, came to the realization of how perfect After Forever would be within and around the other songs.
keep you cool? Would you like to see the pope on the end of the road? Do you think he's a fool? Well, I've seen the truth and I've seen the light, and I've changed my ways. And now be prepared when you're lonely and scared at the end of our day.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Michael. It definitely sticks in with the rest of the album because, like, it's a really heavy record. So it's, yes, Sabbath, you know.
Exactly.
Do you plan on doing a cover song for every record? Like, did you actually plan on doing a cover for this one?
No, I mean, we don't always plan. It's not like we have a specific layout and every record we'll do a cover.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look back, obviously, on you know, Yellow and Black Attack, we never did a cover. Soldiers Under Command, no cover. To Hell with the Devil, you know, no cover.
Yeah.
We started doing covers on
Against the Law.
You know, and you know, and then even you go to Reborn, we didn't do a cover. We covered The End God We Trust, our own song, but it's not like we have a plan to always do covers. The reason why we've been doing them in recent times is because it's been a great opportunity for us to show people, hey, here's where we come from.
Mm-hmm.
This is why we sound like we sound, because of Black Sabbath, because of Van Halen, because of Iron Maiden, because of Judas Priest. You know, and it's, I think it surprises many people because most people probably don't realize that.
Yeah.
They probably think we grew up on Sweet Comfort Band and Petra.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
Yeah. I want to talk about the opening track on the album, Michael, Yahweh. How many voices are on the beginning of that?
That is, in the very beginning, it's Oz and I only, but we multi-layered and multi-track over and over again. So we would do a part, like, I believe, four times, then another, the next harmony up four times, next harmony up four times, so the third and then the fifth, and then we would do the octave four times, and then we would repeat the cycle.
Wow.
So we would do the octave of the third, the octave of the fifth, and then we would do straight ahead harmonies that would just stay on one note throughout, and we kept building it and building it. So if I had to say, oh my gosh, I'm not really sure, but there's many voices, and we did it until it probably took us a couple of hours to do that, until it sounded like a choir of monks.
It does sound like a choir. I agree.
Because that's what I wanted. I kept saying to Oz, look, you and I are going to sound like a choir on this. And we'd sing it, Yahweh. And then I'd say, no, we got to sound more choir-like. So, Yahweh. You know, we try to make our voices sound not like us.
Yeah. That song is an incredible piece of work.
Yeah.
It's very heavy, but I think one of the things about the album, I don't know how many people have said this to you, Michael, it's probably your most progressive sounding record. What I mean by that is it's got big heavy riffs, but there's a lot of time changes on it, and I think the riffs allow Robert and Tim to play around the riff a little bit more than straightforward rock.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, I agree with you. There's definitely more going on this album, there's no question about it, and you know, when you say technical, that's why. I mean, there's a lot more parts to the songs, especially a song like Yahweh.
Yeah,
I mean, that's, you know, there's four tempo changes. It's a 6.5 minute song, and we've never really done anything like that before.
No.
You know, the closest thing we did was maybe God, the song God.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, you know, is is very different as
well. It's a fantastic piece of work, Michael. I have to say, it's as an album opener, it's like, wow, it really sets the tone for the rest of the record.
Well, thank you, buddy. And, you know, I did want to just add on Yahweh, as it gets into the song later, the choir itself, there is an extra voice that comes in, and we multi-tracked her too. Her name is Laura Manzi.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a local singer, a kid, teenager, who has a beautiful voice, and we brought her into the song later on. But I did want to, you know, make sure I pointed that out, that's all.
Yeah, the other track, another track I want to touch on is Pride. I think the heavier direction allows you to show the grittier side to your vocals.
Yeah, well, you know what? Here's the thing on that. When I was singing it, two songs, Pride chorus and Fallen chorus, I wanted to really sing it with the conviction that I've never sung with before. And therefore, in doing so, sound totally different.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, less vibrato, more grit, and really just sing it. And I did it. I had to take a little bit of a breather after I sang those. Because by the time I sang that chorus three times on Pride, you know, I was talking like this, you know. So it's not typically my style of singing. But man, it's cool. It just kind of showcases a little different side to my voice, that's all.
Yeah, channel the inner John Lennon doing the end of Twist and Shout.
Exactly. And, you know, I've got a clear voice, or clearer. These days it's a little grittier, a little deeper, and somehow in an odd way it's kind of working to my advantage, you know?
Yeah, and another track I want to talk to you about is Big Screen Lies, which was one of the singles. Was there something current that made you want to write lyrics like that, or is it just something that's been building over time?
Well, it was just something current, but I've thought about it before. Like when my wife and I watch a movie or watch a television show, and there's a Christian, you know, a Christian character in it, I always say to my wife, like, they're going to be an idiot. Wait and see. And sure enough, we watch it and get through it. I'm like, I told you. And it's just kind of how Hollywood always portrays Christians. They portray them as complete morons.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the Christians that I know, they're the furthest thing from morons. They're smart, grounded, very successful people.
Yeah.
So I don't get it. I don't get why Hollywood thinks that's how Christians have to be portrayed.
Yeah, it's a bit of a different track for you lyrically, Michael.
Oh yeah, totally. It's a different track lyrically, and you know, I think people expect us to in every song be talking about the love of Christ or whatever, and obviously that is our main message. So when we sing a song like Big Screen Lies or a love song or what have you, I think it takes people for a loop, you know.
Yeah, it's a great track as well. Really heavy.
Well, good. Yeah, it's tricky. What I've been trying to do as a producer and as a writer is merge the new with the old.
Yeah.
You know, keep the classic sound, but just put a little bit of a modern twist on it. You know, some of these people, I won't name names, but some of these people from the 80s and the 90s who are just like, you don't even recognize them now, and it sounds like they're trying to be, you know, Black Veil Brides or something. I don't really understand what's going on, and then they wonder why their fans aren't really jumping on board. I really think that, you know, the fans, if you had 10 million fans and sold 10 million albums back in 1989, and you want to keep those fans on board, you got to give them some of that.
Yeah.
You got to give them that classic sound. That's what they're expecting. That's what they're wanting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to do that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the classic sound. Like one of the things you're well known for, the band, is the ballad. But it's a good track, but it sounds like nothing on the rest of the record.
Well, I tell you, you know what? Here's the thing. We always try to throw in a ballad for two reasons. People want to hear it, and we like it.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we like Iron Maiden and Judas Priest, we love Journey as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always an important and a different side to us. We wound up on this album coming up with the tune All Over Again, and I didn't want it to be a piano ballad. That's why we went back. It's almost got a little bit more of like a 70s sound to it.
Yeah.
It's got the slide guitar, and it's more of a retro classic kind of sounding song. And you know what's funny, man? All the metalheads will probably hate that song, but you know, all the people that aren't as into the heavy side of Stryper as the other people are going to love that song. It'll mm-hmm. probably be their favorite.
Yeah, and the other track I want to touch on is King of Kings, the last track. Really, really strong ending.
That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting about that? I'll give you a brief history on that. That's an old song. We were playing back in 82 and 83. He is the King of Kings, that chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And the verses were slow as well. Dun, dun, ba, da, da. You know, it was a slow-tempoed song. Well, I came up with a bomb, a bomb, 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 you know, mm-hmm. which is a little more soldiers under command. And I modernized it and completed it recently and wanted to put that on the album. I felt like, okay, it's got that classic sound, because it is, so let's do it. And it's one of my favorite songs on the record, for sure.
Definitely, and it's got a brilliant guitar solos in it as well. Throughout the album, I think, there's probably more twin guitar leads on this one than on any ones in the past.
There aren't as many harmony guitar leads on this one.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the only song that really does a harmony solo with Oz and I is the song Pride.
Okay.
Everything else, though, is Oz or I.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's both of you, one after the other.
Yeah, it's one after the other. And like for Yahweh, for example, you know, I'm trying to think. I think I start it and then Oz ends it. King of Kings, I'm not sure if it's, it might be Oz first and then me second, I think. But yeah, we do a lot of switching off on this album.
How do you decide who goes first?
I just kind of listen to the song and I make the decision. Like on this album, I went through everything and I felt, I knew Oz was kind of gravitating towards All Over Again. So I go, dude, do that solo, you know? Mm. Take that solo. So he did. He did a brilliant solo to it. There were some songs that I was gravitating to, you know, that I wanted to play on. And I kind of took the song and did my own thing. Like one song that I wound up doing, Oz submitted the initial riff for. We had been playing at Soundcheck for years, and I'm like, oh my God, yeah. And I obviously wrote a melody and a lyric and arranged it. And, my first reaction was to give Oz that solo, but then I just felt like, no, this is more my kind of thing, and that's the song Love You Like I Do.
Yeah.
You know, so it just depends on the song. You know, we go through and split things up, and it's all, you know, 50-50, straight down the middle, and it's always been that way in terms of the guitar soloing.
Yeah, I know one of the things in your book is that sometimes you used to get annoyed with the, you know, people always thought Oz did all the leads.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, it's nothing. I gotta reiterate this and make people understand. It's not me wanting to get glory. I think people kind of view that as, oh my gosh, this guy's got an ego and he just wants all the glory. I could care less.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. You know, if you were to reverse it, I would be equally making as much noise about it in Oz's defense. If people were saying that I played all the leads, I'd be saying, wait a minute here. I'm all about fairness. And when people work hard on something, they should get credit for it.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's me, my brother, Tim, Oz, or anyone else in any band for that matter. So when I have people coming up to me constantly or reviews constantly saying, you know, Oz played, Michael's vocals were great and Oz's guitars were great, or Michael's vocals were great and Oz nailed this solo. And I'm thinking, well, gosh, wait a second. I played that solo. I mean, how do you say that and be a nice guy?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Yeah, you can't.
But I think it's real simple for people to understand if they just put themselves in my shoes. You know, if you guys write a book or if you play something or if you do something and someone else is getting the credit, I mean, are you not going to say anything or are you going to try to say something?
Yeah, you're just
I don't know.
Just a couple of things I want to touch on before we let you go. We had you on promoting the Sweet Lynch album earlier in the year. How close did you get to doing any live shows with George?
How close did I get to, say that one more time?
So how close did you get to actually booking any live shows with George?
Oh, okay. I we got really close. We had a couple conference calls, and we had our agent actually going after it and talking to buyers.
Yeah.
So we were real close, man.
Yeah.
The reason why it didn't work out is we were just all so busy. It just, you know, our agent would come back and say, I've got this. And we'd say, oh, we can't do it because Brian's busy, Brian Tichy. And it was real important for me to do it with the original band on the album. We could have got another drummer, another bass player, and George and I gone out and done some shows, but it's just, it's not the same.
Yeah. And
so what we are working on is another album. We're going to start work on that next year. Nice. Sweet and Lynch 2, featuring, you know, Brian Tichy and James Lomenzo. And we're going to put together a tour at some point and go out and tour it. Cause I mean, that'd be a crime to not go play those songs live.
The other thing I want to talk to you a little bit about is I was fortunate enough to see one of the acoustic shows you did during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Do you get to do a lot of those?
I get to do, this year I did, so far I think I'm up to like 22.
Okay.
And I've got four more coming up.
Okay. And what's the biggest challenge for you in doing an acoustic show?
Well, I mean, the biggest challenge is, you know, you're under a microscope. There's no amps to hide behind.
Yeah.
No Marshalls, no boogies, no drums. There's no band. You go out with an acoustic guitar and you know, you can hear, the audience can hear everything.
Yeah.
If you burp, they're going to hear it. And if you're not filling up the par as a singer, oh well. So, and that happens sometimes, you know, if you're having a little bit of a rough day or night, you still got to go out there and they're going to hear it. So that's the biggest challenge for me, but I love doing them. It's a totally different vibe, and it's an opportunity to just kind of show people the song itself versus the big production, you know? And if a song can't stand on its own with just an acoustic guitar and one voice, then it's most likely not that great a song.
Yeah. I think one of the things you must love about doing acoustic shows is that you can play songs that you don't normally play with Stryper. Like, you played A Dying Rose when I saw you. You played I'm Not Your Suicide. It must be really liberating for you to actually go and play some other tracks that you don't play like 4 or 5 nights a week.
Totally. It is. And it's fun sometimes. I'll do different versions of Stryper songs as well. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just nice hearing the song stripped down sometimes. Like, I still get a kick out of hearing Soldiers in the Command acoustically. it somehow works. I've been doing To Hell with the Devil acoustically.
Yeah.
And as funny as that sounds, it works. And people love it. And they're singing along. And I enjoy it. I get on a plane, I take an acoustic guitar and go, and there's just no stress to it at all. And it's such an intimate night and so personable to just be right there and reach out and high-five people. You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, the other thing I love, Michael, is it's as much about the stories as it is the songs and the banter and with the audience. It does make it very, very intimate.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's kind of a storyteller night and evening with Michael Sweet, and that's another reason why I enjoy it so much. I do it when I'm out there. Do I miss being out with the band and going out and rocking? Absolutely. Because there's nothing like plugging and get in a guitar and cranking it up. That's my passion. You know, I love doing that. But, man, these acoustic gigs have been so much fun. And I plan to keep doing them on and off and hopefully build it like Kip Winger's done it. Mike Tramp has done it. John Corabi, Eric Martin. All these guys have been out for a while doing acoustic sets. And I'm trying to get to where they're at. You know, they got it down. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and what about the band, Striper? Have you ever done acoustic shows before? Or any plans to do any?
Oh, yeah, we have. We've done acoustic shows, the whole band, and it's cool. You know, it's really great. My biggest thing with that is I get a kick out of it. Sometimes, you know, Rob's playing the cajon, and he's playing that darn thing like a drum kit, you know? And he's just, you know what a cajon is, right?
Yeah.
Little drum box.
Yeah.
You're supposed to just boom, bah, boom, boom. And Rob's like, it's funny. But, you know, we have a good time, man. We love going out and doing acoustic sets, the whole band. And the guys actually asked me if we can do more of those, and we will in the future, for sure.
Yeah. So what's next on the agenda then for Striper and for Michael Sweet?
Well, we got the album coming out tomorrow. Depending upon when this interview airs. And I start work on the 16th. I go in the studio, I start recording 16th of November, a new solo album. It's going to be me on guitar. I don't know the bass player yet. I talked to a number of guys. The drummer is going to be Will Hunt. He plays for Evanescence, Black Label Society. Sebastian Bach, he's amazing. And it's going to be a real heavy album. Totally surprise people, completely shock people. Okay, because Michael Sweet albums normally are very eclectic and all over the place. You know, I'll do a metal tune and then I'll do a borderline country song.
Mm-hmm.
This album's going to be heavy, in your face, guitar, riffage, boom. And that's going to come out next year, probably around May or June on Rat Pack Records.
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm real excited about that, man. I'm really excited. Striper's got their album coming out. We're going to tour next year, starting in April through to November. I got a Sweet Lynch album. We're trying to schedule and pencil in a date to start that next year. And then there's another supergroup album that I'm going to be a part of at some point. And that's with Joel Hoekstra, Robbie Crane, and Troy Lucchetta.
Nice. We just had Joel on
last week.
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, man. Joel's one of my favorite players, a dear friend. Have nothing but respect for that guy, and I can't wait to do something with him. It's going to be really cool.
Nice. Excellent. Nice. And I got to tell you, since last time we talked to you, I had a chance to talk to Veronica Freeman, who's another one of my favorite guests to have on the show. She had nothing but just amazing things to say about working with you. I mean, she related the whole thing about, you know, how hard you just worked her butt off doing the album and being reduced to tears and all of that, but how positive all of it was. And I mean, how much she loved working with you and all that. So I just wanted to pass that along with you, that she just was just really raving about just how great it was to come over here to Massachusetts and work with the amazing Michael Sweet.
Well, man, she's a great girl. She really is. She's awesome.
Yeah.
And I was approached to work with her on a couple songs, and I went in, and you know what? I'm definitely hard on people in the studio.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to go in there when everything's on the line and you want to present your best and lie to people.
Yep.
You know, if someone's not cutting it and they say, what do you think? I'm going to say, nah, we can do better.
Right. Yeah.
And that's just how I am. And hopefully that's what makes me a decent producer. And that's the way I was with her, but I try to be polite and everything, you know, and I think I pulled the best out of her. And you know, I don't know if you guys heard the song again,
oh,
but
yeah.
It's a great track, mm-hmm. You know?
From the cliff, you
sadly, not a lot of people know about it because it didn't. It just kind of got thrown out there, and not a lot of publicity or press. But she's a talented singer, man, and I wish her nothing but the best. And if I can work with her again, I will, absolutely.
Yeah, no, she was, and I know, just talking with her and stuff, and she does have this great appreciation. She really thinks that, she needs more people in her life that will not bullshit her and be straight up like you were with her. And ultimately, that's what she needs. That's what she likes about when she talks to me, too, is it's like I'll tell her what I like and what I don't like and be straight up. But she was, she described the whole spot and again and how, how much you worked. And I'm like, I know the exact spot you're talking about, Veronica, but the way that came out and the inflection in your voice, it is perfect for all the work you did and the tears you shed to make it happen. It was so worth it when I listened to that song.
No, man, and I agree. And I was just trying to pull the best out of her, not just out of her, but out of the players.
Yeah.
I remember we started tracking drums on that, and I'm like, no, we got to get it again. No, that's lagging right there. Your kick's late. And Veronica's kind of sitting there on the couch like, what was wrong with that? It sounded good to me. And I'm like, nope, it wasn't good enough. and that's just how I am in the studio. I want to pull the best out of everybody.
Yeah, and that's like for me, when I've done production, that's been the toughest thing I had to get over was seeing what outwardly to anybody else is an amazing performance. And even inwardly, you're thinking, holy crap, that was great. But I got to tell this guy, nope, you messed up. You got to do it again.
I know.
It's tough. But once you're able to do it and have a good relationship to continue with the person, it's I think as a producer, it's really fulfilling as well.
Oh, totally. And I got to say, man, I'll tell you, Striper's kind of in the middle. Like, we'll do a song. My brother and Tim and Oz, they're all great. But, they'll do a track and I'll be like, all right, guys, look, that was really good. But let's do it again because I think you could do better. And we'll do it again. And sure enough, they might improve upon it. And we'll go with that. So a couple takes and we got it. But I did the Sweet Lynch album. And Brian Tichy would go out and play the drums. And he'd do one take. And he'd say, let's do it again. And it was the opposite. I'm the one saying, no, that was amazing. We got it. it was just one take wonder after the other. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Incredible.
I think with Brian, probably the thing is that the way he plays and his style and how his personality comes through with his playing is if you do it again, you lose that spontaneous spark of Brian's playing. And then you're like, and then it becomes like a muted performance.
Totally. Absolutely. And yeah, that's how it is with my brother a lot, too. I mean, you start to kind of lose as you go. Mm. The first take is usually the one and it has the most energy. But I tell you who nails it, too, and I don't really have to work hard with at all is Kenny Aronoff in the studio. That's why I work with Kenny. That's why I work with Brian. And that's why Will Hunt, I'm hiring Will, because to me, those are my top three drummers for that style, the straight ahead, just kick butt rock. Those guys are they're the bomb, man. They're the best.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Kenny Aronoff, holy crap.
forget about it. I mean, he just goes in there and the guy's chewing on, protein bars all day and he can bang out 12 songs in a day and be ready for 12 more. Yeah. And he's like 60 years old, 60. It's insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
And yet you keep coming up with stuff too, left and right. So we'll be saying that about you all the time too. Like, holy crap.
Well, hey, man, you know what? I'm just going to keep doing it while I can. I love it. And man, music's in my blood. So there you go.
Yeah. So Michael, just one final question for me. How good a singer is Robert and how good a drummer are you?
And you want me to be totally honest?
Yeah.
Okay. Robert is not really a singer. He sings. He likes to sing. But there's a reason why we don't have him sing on albums. And, he's on, in the past, he's been on like gangy things like Together Forever, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But actually singing parts, he's not really a singer.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a little pitch issues here and there and whatnot. As a drummer, I can sit on a kit and play. I'm, I'm not anywhere near a great drummer. You wouldn't watch me play and say, wow, I want him in my band. But I've got a really good sense of rhythm and timing, and I can sit on a kit and play and probably surprise people. If I rehearsed, I used to rehearse when my brother was at work, he'd tell me, stay off my kit, and I'd go out and get on his kit and play it when I was a teenager, and I started getting pretty good. But I'm a closet drummer, man. I think if I bought a kit and started playing every day, I could probably play fairly well.
Okay.
Wow.
It's one of the questions I always wanted to ask you, and I always keep forgetting.
Now, if you ask me, you know, what do I think about me as a singer and Robert as a drummer, I'd say we both suck.
No, you're not being honest there.
and I am absolutely kidding. But, yeah, no, I mean, I suppose if Robert got some lessons on singing, he'd probably be a better singer. The thing that you can't teach is pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's with any singer. You can't teach pitch. I mean, if someone has an issue with pitch, then most likely they're never going to be a great singer, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not directed at Robert necessarily. I'm just saying any singer for that matter. But.
Well, you know, for us, you know, selfishly, we're happy that you keep putting stuff out because it's always great to have you on the show. It's always great to talk to you. You're one of these people that we can always count on to be candid and give us some great conversation and some great insight. And we, you know, really appreciate that. That every time you come on the show, and it's also very cool that the solo album is coming on a Rat Pack. I think you're probably Rat Pack's only local artist they have on their roster at this point.
Well, man, that's one of the things that I thought was so cool about signing with them. It's not why I signed with them, but I thought, well, they're local. I could drive up and have sit down face to faces with them. Frontiers is in Italy, you know?
Right.
And it makes it cool. And I think Rat Pack, for what they do, considering the size of the label, I think there's, you know, four or five people that work there, basically out of a garage or a house or whatever. They do phenomenal work.
Yeah, they're insane. Joe and the
they moved 10,000 plus units on that KXM album.
Mm. Yeah,
first week out.
Yep, and they're still promoting it, which is also something you don't see anybody
exactly.
Else do.
They promote. They know how to promote, and you know, I hear that they treat all their artists fairly. They usually do like 50-50 deals, so that you know everything is split. He's a very fair guy, and man, I'm excited to work with them. And honestly, I think they're going to do a great job with this solo album. And I'm excited because I haven't had, in my opinion, a fair shake at a solo album since the first solo album in 94. And what I mean by that is that had a real label behind it and real promotion behind it. It did 250,000 units in like 3 months. So it did really well. Real came out in 95 and the label went bankrupt, closed their doors. Later on, I signed a deal with Restless Records, who's owned by Regency Films. I did the album Truth with Bob Marlette producing it. Turn It In, brilliant album, really great album. Turn It In, a week later, they closed as a label.
Oh, God.
Completely closed their doors as a label because Regency pulled the money plug on them. Mm-hmm. No more financial support.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wind up doing I'm Not Your Suicide with Big Three Records, and they had no people working it at all. They had like two people on staff. They released my album and they released my book. And the day the book came out, I went to Amazon the day of release and it was out of stock. I mean, the day it came out. So that album got no push at all. It still did fairly well. I think it did like almost 4,000 units first week out. So I'm excited to see what a label that actually has a vision and they're going to promote a Michael Sweet solo album. I'm excited to see what it's going to do.
What they do great, Michael, is they do great bundles. They're big into the physical product.
Yes. And I love that. I'm all about that. And obviously, if you have something good to sell, it makes it a little easier. And I'll tell you right now, my mission is to turn in an album that is my best album ever. Awesome. Anything. Better than Sweet Lynch, better than Striper, better than Michael. An album that makes people go, where did this come from? well, what's going on with this guy here? And and that's going to be my goal. I'm going to deliver an album that has everyone talking about it.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have you back on when that comes out, because we're well in with the Rat Pack crowd too. So.
Well, awesome, man. Well, look, I look forward to it, and I so appreciate you guys just taking the time to talk to me and, you know, standing behind us, man. I can't tell you how grateful I am. It's just awesome.
No problem, Michael.
No problem. And if you're ever driving up to talk to Joe and the gang at Rat Pack, and you're driving up Route 3 through Lowell, and you're bored, you want to stop and get a burger or something, you give Richie and me a call. We'll hook up with you.
Nice, man. We'll get some Dunkin' Donuts.
It's horrible stuff.
I know. Hey, you said it, not me.
I won't even deny I said it. I remember back in the day when they actually had good coffee and they made the donuts right in the store. Not anymore.
Oh yeah, I bet it was good then, right?
It was good then. Yep, but not
I
anymore.
Bet.
All right. Jeez. Well, good, Mike. It's like I said, it's insanely awesome to be able to talk to you again. And if we don't talk to you between now and when the solo album comes out, we're certainly looking forward to hooking up with you then and letting everybody know about that one.
Absolutely, man. And that'll be sooner than later. I mean, I'm turning it in by the end of January, early February. I'll start doing interviews around March and April.
Awesome.
That's
so
great.
I look forward to talking soon, guys, okay?
All yep. right.
All right, Michael.
And enjoy the rest of this nice Massachusetts day here.
Yes, sir. You guys have a good one. Stay out of trouble, okay?
All right.
We'll try. All right, Michael.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
There you go. Great talk, as we said, with Michael Sweet. Hope you guys enjoyed that one. And I was stunned with the last questions from Richie. the Robert Michael drummer vocal question. That
Why
was,
not?
That
Why
was
not?
Great.
It's begging to be
it
asked.
It was great. It was a great question. It was great.
It's begging to be asked. And yeah. he was like, nice. You know what? How many people do you think ask him that question?
I wouldn't say many.
So
no
why
one.
Not ask him?
No, it was a great question.
Yeah.
That was definitely a great question.
Yeah, all the rest of them were terrible.
that was a good closing question, was that. So, yeah, that was great. So, hope you guys enjoyed that interview. It was a blast to do. And we got more good stuff on the way, that is for sure. But for this week, that's a wrap. Remember to follow us on focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You can always talk with Richie on Facebook. And also follow us on Twitter. So any final thoughts?
No.
Nothing?
Still great music coming out.
Yep.
I can't fault the albums coming out lately. They're still top-notch.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff out there. So, all right, that's it. We've declared it done. We'll talk to you again next week. And until we do, remember...
Focus on metal!
Everything else is insignificant.
Throw your hands in the air, and be never the same. It's over. Go home.